Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey, everyone, and welcome yet again to the Grow Your Business podcast. I'm speaking with Clayton Musk today. Clayton, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, great to be with you, Saul. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, likewise. Whereabouts are you? I always say at the start of the podcast, so people, because I kind of like to hear it, I guess, and it's nice for people to get a visual. Where are you speaking from today? I'm in Australia. Like most people would know that I'm in Brisbane, Australia. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Chandler, Arizona, which is just outside of Phoenix.
Right. Nice weather.
You know what? Right now it's still blazing hot. We're having the worst heat in October we've ever had. So It's been a very long, hot summer.
Yeah. It's getting into the summery weather now in Australia too, but I can't complain. Like it's nice.
Yeah.
It's
nice. You guys,
always talk about, talk about the weather. People are like, yeah. Well, let's talk about the weather and the landscape and the climate of small business and, you know, where that meets technology. Cause that's like so I guess before we get into that, for people, like a lot of people probably know, who you are and what you do, but for those who don't, could you give everyone just a little bit of a, overview of who you are, what you get up to, what you have been up to, and maybe where you're going.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm the co-founder and CEO of Keep, K-E-A-P, like Keep Growing. And our software is business automation software that helps small businesses conquer the chaos and challenges that hold them back from growing and enables them to grow their business more effectively so they can get the money, the time, the freedom that they want from their business.
Yeah. So this is, I just before the start of the podcast, we were sort of talking a little bit about just very shortly about the where those two things meet, like where people, how people have always done business. But these days with CRMs and all the technology that we've got at our fingertips for, you know, optimization, you know, to improve processes in at this point, and this is a pretty broad question, but you know, I guess being somebody who's created a piece of software that people use and love and helps them do that, the sort of feedback and things that you found over the years from where you started, what you're now doing to where we are now, how do you see that landscape has changed in terms of how people view technology like CRMs?
Yeah. Well, like you said before we started this recording, you said you see people in small business that are reaching for this kind of technology more than they used to be. And there's more of a discussion about it. And, you know, as you said, CRM, which is, you know, stands for customer relationship management, it's at the heart of our automation platform. It's the heart of what we do. We can't do the automation without the customer relationship management aspect of it. So I think that if I take your question and think about what it used to look like versus what it looks like now, I think, you know, probably, gosh, two decades ago, Salesforce.com had made CRM a popularized thing, but it was really for big businesses. And then we and others started to bring it to small businesses. And I think originally small businesses could see that it was effective to have their customer information all in one platform to be able to communicate and email out and, you know, send marketing messages to those customers. And so what I saw initially was adoption of the concept of a customer database, which really is what CRM, you know, kind of starts with. And then I saw it start to evolve into the strategy of customer relationship management in terms of marketing. And I think that's where it was very natural and easy for small businesses to grab a hold of CRM, because if you don't do that work with those, if you don't do the relationship work with prospects to turn them into customers, then, you know, you struggle to build your business. And so in short, I would say that CRM first was adopted in small businesses around marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great answer. And what I mean, this is, I guess, from my general explanation, primarily even in my own business of going, oh, I'm going to try this CRM, or mm-hmm. yeah, my natural inclination, even now when I have particular tools that I use, is I'm always going, even if I don't need to, I'm going, oh, I've heard this, or I'm just going to check mm-hmm. it out just cause, you know, just because yeah. I, you know, maybe there's like some, you know, magic bullet there, or like something, or also just natural curiosity, I guess, too. And the thing that I know from talking to other people, and I guess even myself, is that in the early days when I thought of a CRM, it was probably like, to dumb it down, it was like a fancy contact list, mm-hmm. like in people's minds. So this is where I guess that question was also leading to, like, where it is now, and you answered some of that too, in that it's brought together a bunch of different tools, because it never really used to have automation. Like, automation seems like such a standard thing now, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's like all these tools have it in one form or another, and you got AI now, so it's improved it even more. And CRMs have become more of an all-in-one marketing solution instead of, which to me kind of makes more sense and a little bit surprising that it wasn't all of that in the first place. But I guess there's always an evolution, right?
Yeah, because what happened was, your observation is really good, that it's CRM did kind of evolve into marketing automation for small businesses. But we have to keep in mind that CRM was really born in big business, big enterprises, you know, and they've got.
Yes.
And so it starts there. But for small businesses, what I observed was email marketing really started to drive the effectiveness of CRM for small business. And then the email marketing started to evolve more into marketing automation, whereas lead capture and automated follow-up. And that age-old problem of follow-up that plagues small businesses was something that was a real revelation for small business. It was like, oh my gosh, you can automate the follow-up process, which is really just, you know, the heart of marketing automation. But you needed email marketing, you needed text marketing, you needed these capabilities to be able to automate lead collection, lead nurture, lead follow-up, turning it into a new customer. And then over time, I would say what happened was people started to see what they could do beyond the conversion of the lead to a customer. So now once they're a customer, now how do we continue to apply marketing automation, sales automation, service automation? And I think that's what's really, in the last 2 or 3 years, I think has continued to evolve. You've gone from seeing CRM to include email marketing, to then include all of marketing automation, to now include beyond just marketing, but sales, service, operations, and really to be an automation platform, which is, you know, what we have evolved into over the last couple of years.
As a person, because you're very big on helping small business, of course, and you've got the book that you co-authored, Conquer the Chaos. Mm-hmm. So that was Conquer the Chaos, How to Grow a Successful Small Business Without Going Crazy. Mm-hmm. Everyone relates to that, right? It's the constant thing. I don't think I've ever met, me included, you know, actually, I think there was somebody at a networking group the other day who asked, it was like, who's been, you see a lot, this is like, it wasn't like, who's gone crazy? It was like, who's had a meltdown? Who's done this? And everyone's like,
Yeah.
Everyone puts up there, it's like, well, you know, who's going to not? Because at varying level, that's just the nature of small business. So like in our industry too, doing websites, and these worlds are very intertwined these days with CRMs and people thinking completely differently about their, or not everybody, but many people thinking very differently about how to use their website and this sort of untapped potential. And I guess like my next question is around like all these tools, in including, you know, web tools and AI and all the like amazing things that Keap can do and all different CRMs. But where do, like, from your side of how you perhaps like to educate people about, you know, one, how to conquer that chaos and how these tools can help, but where, like, the point where just the technology on its own and then how people actually use it, like the other part of it, because there's this part that I guess you and I are probably in a different privileged position. We're seeing people hands-on using the tools and then having feedback. And then people going, it's like when people go, they sign up for something like Salesforce or different things, and then they really only realize once they're using particular tools if it's for them. Is it too complex? Is it too big? Do they have, like, they're a sole trader, or they're like, you know, a husband and wife team, and they don't actually, like, who's going to actually use it? Who's going to create the sales pipeline? Who's going to nurture the leads? Like, the tool is just a tool. So, like, the hammer doesn't hammer the nail on its own. Like, the person has got to hammer it. So then where you come in, what sort of, tips or, you know, things that are maybe recurring things do you talk about with small business owners to help them, you know, just sort of start to get across the potential of this?
So I'll hit that one briefly, but then let me come back to the chaos part of it, where the problem really, really sits. The short answer to what you just described about the software, but then how are people using it and driving results in their business? I've said this over and over and over, and coming from a software CEO, this might sound kind of odd, but it's not about the software.
Yeah.
The software is it's a tool. And what we say all the time is software plus strategy plus services equals success. You need the software, but you also need the strategy of how you're going to use it in order to accomplish your goals, your objectives. Mm. And then you need services. People don't like to hear this, but it's the truth. Most of the time in small business, you don't have a team of people you can just go bring into and turn them loose on the software. And so you need services. You need tech support. You need professional services, implementation services. You need services to make sure that you are successful in driving this, using the software. And I've been doing this for over two decades. I've seen it with our product. I've seen it with every product that's on the market. It's especially true the more it's a small business product, because in larger companies, you have large teams and people you can throw at the solution. But in small business, you need to buy software from a vendor who brings the strategy and the services to help you to be successful. So let me just put a pin in that. We'll come back around to that. But I want to just address that point because it's important that we don't just think, oh, it's all about whatever software I get. And, oh, the answer is the software. No, the answer is not the software. Most of the software does fundamentally the same thing. Now, you know, I'm a bit biased, of course, and so I love our product. I love what we do because we're so focused on automation, and that's where we really differentiate ourselves. But let's come back to the problem, because we're kind of getting to the solution. The problem is the chaos in small business, and you called it out. You go to a network meeting. If you're going to get an honest answer from people and you ask them, hey, tell me how it's going balancing your business and your life. Hey, tell me, like, how's the freedom that you're getting out of this business when you went to go start this business and you're like, yes, I'm going to be free. I'm not going to have a boss. I'm going to have all this time and I have no cap on the money I make. And it's going to be so great to be an entrepreneur and a business owner. And most of the time, if you get people to be honest, they'll say, wow, it's way harder than I thought. It takes way more time. I might be making more dollars per hour flipping burgers than doing what I'm doing running this business, because it takes so much of me and my you know, my team, whatever that is. It might be your spouse, daughter, son, neighbor, couple of employees, family members, whatever. But you've got this small team of some way you've put it together. And it's taxing everyone, especially the business owner. So I think we got to just stop for a second and say, well, what the heck? Is this what we signed up for as entrepreneurs, starting a small business? Is this, you know, is this just the way it is? And I talk about this in Conquer the Chaos, and there are two fundamental reasons why every person in that room had a meltdown. There's two fundamental reasons why there's this chaos that seems to wrap itself around us when we get going in a business. The first reason is that there are not enough hours in the day to do it all in small business. There just aren't. There's too much to do. And you can't do it all. And you don't have a big team of people to throw at the tasks. And so you've got this fundamental challenge where there's 10 pounds of potatoes and a 5-pound sack. You just have too much. You can't fit it all. And that's the first issue. And by the way, a lot of times entrepreneurs make it harder on themselves because they don't own up to that issue, that very true fact that there's too much to do. There are not enough hours in the day to do it all in small business. So that's the first problem. Second problem actually compounds the first problem. And the second problem is that in small business, our systems and processes are usually woefully lacking. They're inadequate to accomplish the outcomes that we want. And we don't realize when we get into small business that we need to create processes and systems, because without that, we're playing whack-a-mole. We're doing things over and over. There's a lot of repetitive manual work. There's again, it compounds the problem that there aren't enough hours in the day. So if we can get to some agreement that the chaos that we face in small business comes down to those two factors. There's two driving factors. There's not enough hours in the day, and we have inadequate processes and systems. Then we can go, okay, well, how might we address this so that we can start to get the money and the time and the freedom that we signed up for when we went to go start this business? Nobody started the business to be struggling and to feel like they have to sacrifice all of their friends and family and relationships and health and hobbies and interests and everything else just to make this dang business work, right? That's not why people started their business. It was the lure of freedom. And yet that's not what we get. So I want to pause there for a second to see how that resonates with you and your audience on the causes of small business chaos.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm sure like, you know, like we said earlier, like people that I talk to all the time in completely different industries. And even like when I've been speaking with clients and we have probably, I guess like you, when there's anything, especially these days, that relate to technology, that relates to your business and relates to the management of it, and then your brand, you know, your website, there's different interesting little insights you get into other people's business. You get like a little window like into them. And I always find that incredibly interesting. But what I also find is I find it sort of from a selfish point of view, I kind of find it encouraging in a weird way that I'm not alone, that other people, are going, I don't go, oh, wow, that's great. You're going through the same, you know, hard things that I am. It's just kind of like, wow, I'm not the only one, which, you know, intellectually, and you know, that's the case, but having that reminder, and then it's what you're saying generally about the chaos. So, you know, I take away sort of very, to simplify, the general message about what you've just been talking about is that at the heart of it, a good plan is obviously a good strategy generally for your business, you know, which I guess once again, this isn't rocket science. I'm not saying anything new to people. Everybody knows that a good strategy and a good plan, but is super important. Generally for everything, you know, for life, work balance, you know, having things done, probably even the acceptance. This is actually something I was talking to my wife about recently, and we were talking about it actually wasn't work related to Roundhouse. It was like just other things we were doing with this house, and we were like, okay, it's just easier mentally to accept that things are like quite difficult. It's easily because once you kind of accept that and then just go, okay, well, we just, in order for this to even mentally get through, you have to have this element of faith that that's going to work out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that, it, in my mind anyway, I don't know about you, but you kind of don't almost have anything if you just go, oh, it's kind of, you know, there's just this thing gnawing away at you all the time. But if you go, it's going to be hard. It's like when you're playing any sports match. I always like to use the sports analogy because it seems to be almost the most true thing, because you can't hide in sport. Right. You can't hide. You just can't. Like, you can hide in a bunch of other areas in your life, but in sport, when you're out there either in a team or especially one-on-one, because I play squash. And so I play a lot of play, like, you know, competition squash. You can't hide. It's there. Mm-hmm. Stuff happening in real time. You got to deal with it. And it's how you deal with it, even though it's physical activity, the mental side of it, of going, this is difficult, slow your mind down and just accept that and then work out the plan. And then at least, even if the plan didn't work out, then at least you're better educated for the next match.
And like you said, it's confronting the difficulty and having the faith that you're going to prevail. You'll be successful as you take on the challenge.
Yeah, to some extent, for me anyway. I don't know about sort of you, and maybe these are things you talk about with in helping other business owners. But for me, the acceptance that it's just going to be hard, which in itself is kind of, you know, what does that even mean? For me, that's kind of a powerful thing. It helps me to neutralize the problem at least a little bit. Like, it doesn't solve the problem, obviously.
Right.
Maybe not the problem, but the thing that needs addressing that's causing the chaos. But it helps a lot, going like, okay, I know that that's here. And instead of, you know, what is probably pretty normal for a lot of people to put their, you know, put your head in the sand or do whatever. I mean, that's, you know, I still do that to this day with a bunch of tasks. Like, you put it off or you do this, but I'm better at it. Like, I don't, I'm not angel or perfect when it comes to that. I can tell you right now, like, I'm still not great at that, but I know I'm better at it. And especially when I think back to, like, oh my gosh, I was so, so green, like, you know, all these years ago. It's like, was I really like that? I was like, yeah. Right. It's so funny to think about that, but that's everyone, hey. That's like,
sure.
And you go, oh, well, that's, I always find that encouraging too. But like with the, so tell us just a little bit about the book too, because you were the co-author of that. When was that written? And what was the kind of the impetus for it?
Yeah. So my co-founder and I co-authored the book about 14 years ago. And the impetus was, we had created marketing automation and we were trying to teach that to the world. We were teaching them, look, you have a system that's broken in your business called follow-up. And that follow-up system needs to be implemented in your business. Otherwise, you're going to keep dropping the leads, the customers, the money and the time is just leaking out of your business like a leaky bucket. And how do you grow a business when you've got a leaky bucket? It's really hard and it's very inefficient. It's very wasteful. And the business owner feels the cost of that. They feel the, you know, just like they're running on a treadmill and not making any progress because they've got a leaky bucket. Well, what's the leaky bucket? It's that follow-up system that has not been implemented. What happens when a new lead comes in? How do you nurture them to the point that they've raised their hand and now they're a hot prospect? How do you cultivate them through and convert them to a new customer once they become a customer? You know, it's just that follow-up system. So that was the impetus. We had created CRM and marketing automation. And then a couple of years ago, we said, you know what, now we've kind of evolved and turned it into business automation, and we should write an update to the book. And I went to my business partner and I said, hey, Scott, let's do a revised edition. This was maybe 18 months ago. And I said, you know, we've done now it's not just marketing automation, it's sales automation and service automation and operations. It's like an automation platform for your entire business. He's like, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Why don't you do that? He said it was pretty hard doing that the first time.
Possible.
So I went ahead and did that, spent time over the past year or so, and we launched it in the spring and got the book out there so that we could help businesses understand that problem of the leaky bucket and the problem that it's not just in your marketing. This failure to follow up and the failure to automate so much of what is being done manually in the business is costing entrepreneurs tremendously. And so that was the impetus for the rewrite. And funny thing happened last year as I started rewriting it is I thought it would be about a 20%, you know, I thought most everything's going to be the same. Maybe it'll be about 20% revision.
Yeah.
And it turned out, you know, so much has happened in the past 14 years that it turned into about 90% is
wow.
Concept, of course, of the system that breaks down and needing to get automated follow-up in place is still there. But I took a little different approach by the time I really started dig in on this project. And this is not a ghostwritten book. This is not this is me holed up in a hotel room week after week. You know, I would work normally for a week and then write for a week and then work normally for a week and then write for a week. And I just did that for a long time. And I fell in love with the book. It's the book I wish I could have read 20 years ago when I was a young entrepreneur. But it really, to me, it's not just about the strategy and the automation. That's half of the book. The first half of the book is actually about how we avoid the dark side of entrepreneurship, that chaos that actually gets to a point where it consumes us, breaks us, can cause all kinds of problems in our personal lives. You know, I'm sure if you've been around small business long enough, you've seen it. You've seen spectacular successes that flame out with major personal crises, and you've seen major, significant failures in business that also take out people personally. And I've just seen way too much of that. You know, working with hundreds of thousands of small businesses, I've just seen the toll that it takes on people and the way that it affects them personally. And so I wrote the book this time after having practiced and worked on it and coached and taught and served entrepreneurs. And so the book is, you know, you called out the first edition, which was how conquer the chaos, how to grow a successful small business without going crazy. The second edition is Conquer the Chaos, the 6 Keys to Success for Entrepreneurs. And so it's literally a decade and a half later after practicing, serving, observing, and it's 3 keys are personal keys and 3 keys are business keys. And it's those 6 keys that go together to create my definition of success, which is balanced growth in your business and personal life.
Isn't it funny? That sounds fantastic. And I'll just have a secondary question after this one, because as you were saying things, I was like, oh, I have something specific to ask. But like, how many? No, actually, I will ask the other one first, because it's when you're writing the book, rewriting the book, did you have any particular, light bulb moments about, like, instead of going, you know, from the perspective of rewriting it to update what's currently happening, did you have any different unexpected realizations about things as you're writing it during that process?
Yeah, in particular on the personal side, what happened was I'm kind of a, you know, I'm just a junkie for personal development, coaching, you know, learning programs. I've done tons of them over the years. And what happened was, I've never really taught the personal aspects of it in entrepreneurship. I teach the leadership, I teach the automation, I teach the strategy, which are the three keys on the business side. But I've never really taught the life vision, the rhythm of execution. And so I had done a bunch of things around teaching mindset, but what evolved in the rewrite was this personal side of it and the keys to success that I've experienced and that I've observed in others on the personal side. And it really came from just all kinds of different programs and seminars and events and coaching sessions and mastermind groups that I've done and invested in over the years. And I think what happened was I realized I have a lot of passion for teaching that. And I had been doing it ad hoc. You know, entrepreneurs would come seek me out for advice and I would teach them this stuff, but I didn't really ever codify it and put it into a book. And so that was the real realization for me, was it really pushed me to synthesize the things that I had practiced and learned and seen as being effective in the lives of entrepreneurs from a personal standpoint. And that was a lot of fun. And so in the original book, I talked about mindset, but I didn't go deep into how you actually turn that mindset into a life vision, not a business vision, a life vision. And then how do you actually execute that life vision that serves your business and serves your personal life and brings it all together? And so that was a really fun aspect of doing the rewrite.
Yeah. And I guess the question comes from a point of hearing a lot of other, you know, people, some of whom are business coaches or other people in probably, you know, similar positions to yourself, where you hit sort of a point, maybe it's a life thing or career thing, or a life and career thing, is you have certain realizations about things in general, which is, I guess, predominantly based on just experience and just reflection and going. And then, but the common thread that which is, I guess, a little bit the advantage, which I only now know upon reflection about having the podcast, is that a common thread, and I've said this before on the podcast, and I find it really, really interesting, and it's become more of a curiosity to me as time goes on, talking to people like yourself and other coaches, or just other people in all sorts of different industries, who come to a point, and the common thread is that everyone comes to a certain point of having a stronger and stronger and stronger urge to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
There's this common thread of the, well, and I mean, I think I sort of knew that anyway, because people have and the journey for many, not everyone, but with many people, they're very high performing people, very successful in a certain area. They burn out, things crash and burn, and then they're kind of like reborn like a phoenix in like a new version of themselves through the fire, almost, like, you know, not quite literally, but, and that's a common thread. And,
yes.
And or in one form or another, it's not like, you know, to one extreme, but at varying degrees of this common thread. And I thought, that's really interesting, because it comes up time and time again in the podcast.
Yeah.
And it's only because then I've sort of had the podcast and I have this sort of interesting point to be able to talk to people about their stories. And I'm going, there's something in that. There's like, there's this natural urge for, I feel like most people who obviously need this entrepreneurial journey, then to want to, there's this natural urge to give back and help. Plus then they're entrepreneurs, so they turn it into like a way to earn a living, which is great. And, but to do that, and I was like, that is really great. Like I really, that always makes me, it's hard to put into words, but always is kind of comforting that is a natural urge then that I see people having.
Yeah. And definitely was true for me. I turned 50 and that was kind of an impetus. You know, it was the combination of evolving our software from marketing automation to business automation and turning 50. And those two things just caused me to want to rewrite the book. And yeah. And it was like, we've learned so much. I want to teach. And I think that natural tendency you're calling out is very ingrained in entrepreneurs. I think it's true of human beings, but especially in entrepreneurs, I think we have a desire to serve. And then once we learn a bunch of stuff, it's like, well, now I want to go teach this and help other entrepreneurs. And so we see the same thing in our customer base all the time. We see people that will use our product in their industry, and then they'll come to us and they'll say, hey, I want to package up everything I've done and take it to other people in my industry. And we actually see it so commonly that we recently created what we call Solution Launchpad that enables our customers and partners to package everything up for their audience, whether that's their industry or their membership or their geographic location, whatever their specialty is. Enabling them to embed that specialty into a special edition of our product that they can then go take to their customers. So we see that same tendency, and we have created software adaptations to make that possible for people to go teach it.
That's really interesting. And you see that manifestation too on things like YouTube and everywhere online where people are going, okay, I'm passionate about something. It could be like anything. And they make some video about it or series of videos, and they start off, you know, in their own entrepreneurial way going, how am I going to do this? Like, does it have to look professional? And then next thing you know, and then they get a bit better, and then a bit more practice, and they get better. Next thing you know, they got like 100,000 followers. And I've seen that across all, you know, and, you know, things that I'm generally interested in, you know, learning how to lay a floating floor. I remember like years ago when it was incredibly helpful from someone that I didn't know. And I've often reflected on that particular time because it was the first time I did some more bigger scale, serious handyman sort of thing. And I was really proud of myself. And but then I was really happy. There was a guy in the States. I was just searching like how to lay this particular floor. And this guy had this really, you know, it was pretty lo-fi, but it was really helpful and it was really well explained and it was really friendly and it was really useful. And I had it there while I was doing the job. And I was like, that's a great other manifestation of that general tendency we're talking about of people just wanting to assist each other for the betterment, obviously. I mean, not everyone always thinks about it in these terms when they're doing it. They're just like, I want to do it. And, and then I get to get some income from YouTube, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, the passion behind it is what drives it, right?
And then you've got. It becomes magnetic.
Yeah. So at this point with you and Keep and all the things you've been speaking about, what do you see for the current and then for the future for your industry I guess it's like everybody's industry in a way, like CRMs, isn't it? In a funny way, it sort of is. Where do you see that going now that you've got CRMs, you've got this sort of interesting evolution of email marketing now, which we could speak about sort of separately then too, about where that meets automation, where that meets marketing, where, and then the introduction now of tools like AI. How do you see that, those tools working to enhance all these core things we've been speaking about, the potential for that?
Yeah. It's a really interesting, you know, when you look out into the future, you kind of see where it is now and how things have been coming together and then how that plays out in the future. It's a really interesting combination on the one hand of automation and AI, and on the other hand of personalization and relationships. You know, and you think about it, AI is not relationship. It's a simulated relationship. And automation is not personalization, but it can be done in a way. So what I see is the convergence of these two things, automation and AI on the one hand, and personalization and relationships on the other hand, and learning to use those capabilities. And, you know, we're putting those capabilities into our product. A lot of CRM providers are doing this, but it's really teaching people to teaching customers and practitioners of this stuff to bring this all together around that relationship, around personalization, instead of just automating and applying AI in a way that doesn't actually address the human craving of personalization and relationship. And so that's what I see, is those things coming together. And certainly there will be more and more capabilities around automation and around AI, but the winners, the big winners, will apply that in personalization, relationship building, because that will never change. Business is relationships. And especially in small business, you think about the big difference between small business and big business, it is personal. That's what makes small business different. Mm-hmm. And so how do you leverage automation and AI to create those personal relationships that enable you to differentiate yourself as a small business from larger competitors?
Yeah. I think that's a really key point. And I've observed too, for the most part, I feel like most people, even people who wouldn't consider themselves to be, tech savvy, or, you know, I'm not into this, or I'm not into tech stuff or whatever. I've found most people in business generally, or people, have a pretty good nose for things that aren't authentic. Like, some people better than other people. And what and I guess where I'm getting with that is generally things on the internet, like, you know, it's usually blatantly obvious, although in early days with stock photography and just general use of that, because people are more, and I feel my personal theory is it's just like osmosis. People absorb information and they don't really think about it, but just one day they wake up and they're like, oh, actually, I kind of know what's, you know, it's just from their fast exposure to information, of which is at unprecedented sort of scale these days, without people even realizing it. They're just absorbing like information and they're going, this is real, this is, and with AI now too, and with, you know, different things that are very powerful tools to simulate human relationship related things, you know, content. That's I found even now, talking to people, which I find curious, because on one hand, I would expect you to be more of an expert or more exposed to realize this, but to talk to enough people to go, oh, yeah, there's just something, they can't pinpoint it, but there's something a bit off with something, like it's written well, but it doesn't sound right. Therefore, straight away, and I was like, oh, interesting. People actually have a pretty strong nose for that. Yeah. So it gets back to your point of like the these are great tools, but they're tools that at the heart of it is good strategy, good human thinking, because that's ultimately what it's all about, right? Of course.
Yep.
That's why we're doing all this. And to use these like great tools that you've made, to enhance things and make, you know, ideally people's life less chaotic, and to bring sort of to help, because they're not like a magic bullet on their own. Like a lot of people, you know, and I'm sort of, maybe you can address this point too. Like if there's any particular things you talk to people about when somebody goes in and say they sign up for Keep and they're like, okay, that's my new CRM. And they haven't got much exposure to that, or they've had minimal in the past, and they sign up and they go, great, I've heard this is going to make my life really easy. And then they get really disappointed when it doesn't, because they don't have like any sort of strategy around it or any plan. It's like, you know, working into any particular activity for the first time and expect a certain outcome. And because you haven't got whatever you need to have at least a good starting outcome, it's probably going to not work out well, right?
Yeah.
And that's that's maybe like exacerbated even more with something like a CRM. So when is there an important series of things that you do more than you used to now for like an onboarding process with people to help them with all that?
Yeah, it's a great point. You kind of jumped right to one of the pain points that where the, you know, this problem manifests itself. The problem is that people think that you buy the software and it produces all the results that you want. And in small business with an automation platform, that's just not the case. We have pre-built automations that you can load so that you don't have to build everything from scratch. But you have to have a strategy of what you're trying to do in your business, and you have to have some services to help you connect that all together and make the strategy work. And just go back to my point of automation and AI on the one hand and personalization and relationship on the other hand. You can't just, as a customer of small business, you can't just say, well, you just go make that relationship work for me. Well, hold on. It's your relationship, right? Imagine in your marriage, if you just said, hey, let me just hire somebody to come and make this relationship work better for me. Like surely there's a service where you can just do that. No, like it's your relationship. These are your relationships in business. And so the business owner and team must work with the software provider to at least articulate what do we want this relationship to be. And then once you articulate that, then you can say, oh, okay, well, here's how we'll go about doing that. We'll use this automation here and that automation there. We'll use this other automation over there. And we'll make sure that the follow-up strategy follows this type of a sequence. But without some input from the business owner that says, here's how I want my relationships to go in business. Why would we think that buying a piece of software is going to solve that relationship problem? It's just not realistic. And yet it is 9 times out of 10. It is the mindset that software buyers have in small business. They think I'm buying CRM and there you go. Well, wait, you're buying relationships, but only you can decide what you want that relationship to be. So what we do, to jump right to your point, in the implementation process, we have a series of one-on-one conversations with the business owner to articulate and draw out of them the strategy. And we have lots of ideas and suggestions. Hey, here's what works for so-and-so, and here's what works for other people like you. But those questions have to be answered by the business owner or by the business strategist, whoever it is that's implementing the software on the customer side, in cooperation with us from the software vendor side. So we partner with the customer, with our customer, to say, okay, we've got the software for you, and it is the best automation platform to help small businesses grow. I may be slightly biased, but it's true. And so we bring the software, but now we've got to collaborate with the customer to determine the strategy. And then we've got to provide the services here and there. Sometimes it's a matter of integrating it the right way with your website. Sometimes it's a matter of connecting it with your accounting software. Sometimes it's a matter of certain industry specific tools that you have. So there's oftentimes the services require some integration work. Sometimes the services require building out the landing pages. You know, we've got templates and all those things, but there's customization that's needed so that it comes across with your own brand. And if you don't have someone on your team to do that, then you need to have the vendor or a partner that helps provide that. And so we can provide that, or we can have our certified partners provide it. But one way or the other, software vendors are doing no service. No, they're not doing any service to their customers if they tell the customer, look, it's all there. You don't need to do any services. I mean, that's just a total disservice to the customer. No pun intended. You've got to help them understand that you need the software. You need the strategy to get the relationships built the right way. And then there's going to be some gaps that the customer has in terms of their own capabilities of building it all out. And that's where our services come into play. So what we do is, a customer that starts with us, we have an implementation package. If they buy the annual package, we'll include that implementation package for free. But if they pay on the month-to-month program, then they need to buy an implementation package with us, which generally is about $1,000 for kind of a standard implementation. So that's the short answer of how we help on implementation. Now, we also have ongoing services that our customers can get to consume and implement more and more of the software, more and more automation across their business. And if they don't want to get the services from us, they can get services from our community of certified partners out there that offer services.
Yeah, I think that's it's actually really great that you've got that approach too, because being a consumer of tech sort of products for a range of different things over the years, and you know, being from the early days of websites and seeing this kind of evolution of CRMs and as things are coming together more, and also coming together as we've kind of been talking about, like the idea of work-life balance for me these days is now almost redundant, because people are talking about that as one thing the whole time now. Like that's it's a funny term, because I actually reflected on that the other day. I was like, oh, that term's kind of, I mean, maybe not completely redundant, but for me, they're talked about as the same thing so often for all the right reasons. And we've touched on some of this that you know, should never in some ways have been talking about them as separate things, because they're always integrated. But but like that and technology and this merger of things in a way, and you addressing that point, which for me has always been a key thing in my mind, and it's a key weak spot for probably not just, you know, for CRMs, but for most technology for people. And it's why there's probably, you know, tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of websites out there that are sitting sad and lonely and nobody edits them. And I generally theorize it's not because people can't do it. It's because, you know, people haven't had support. They haven't had. That's a key thing. And that's actually why we always just go, hey, we just offer as part of it, if you need, like, we'll show you how to do it. If you need a hand, we're there to help you. So you've got support. You've got ongoing support. That's the key thing, is like doing it is another thing. And then having a buddy, support, help, you know, someone there that you know to support you and address those things we've been talking about is like a key thing. But like, I think that human centered sort of approach for your product and service for people is wonderful. It does seem, I mean, I haven't tested every CRM on the planet, obviously, but I've used a bunch, and that does seem a bit more unique, because I've gone through, you know, because you do trials and things. And I do. Yeah. Like I said earlier, like I just do that for the hell of it often, just to see what's out there.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, often come across that, you know, it's probably not even, it's not intentional, but people don't have that approach. They haven't addressed that pain point.
Yeah.
Of it.
Well, here's the thing that a lot of times software companies don't like to talk about, but it's been proven and shown, particularly in CRM software. Now, by the way, what I'm about to say is a little bit different if you are talking about a robust platform for your business versus a little software tool or an app or something that you can use, just kind of a small thing. But if you're talking about ERP or accounting software or CRM software, these are major platforms that you use in a business. And independent, you know, from the software companies, the CRM industry, which you might say, well, wait, what's the CRM industry independent from software? There's a whole movement of CRM that has nothing to do with software. It's about the strategy of customer relationship management. And there are several major players in that world who have done studies and gone out to customers to find out how much money do you spend on how many dollars do you spend on service versus how many dollars you spend on software in CRM? So they're going out and they're saying, hey, in the world of CRM, how much do you spend on service? How much do you spend on software? And I'm not sure how much I like this for our software industry, but the answer that they've come up with repeatedly and consistently is a 5-to-1 ratio on services dollars to software dollars. So if you spend $5,000 on a software subscription, you're spending 5 times more than that on the services to go along with it. Now, that's in the enterprise world generally. In our world, in small business, it is somewhere between 1 and 3 times. And I can tell a customer, honestly, and with a straight face, if you're not planning on spending some money on services, whether that's a full-time person you hire to run it, or a part-time person hire that you run, or maybe a software partner or the manufacturer like us, somewhere, some way, if there's a customer who's successful with a CRM product, I'm not talking Keep, I'm talking any product, you're going to find that that successful customer is spending a multiple in the numbers of dollars on services than they are on the software subscription. And that little secret of the industry is not wanting to be discussed by software vendors, but it's the truth. And
yeah,
it's
a harder sell then, isn't it? It's
like, yes, exactly. Because then people go, well, wait, I'm going to spend $300 a month on your product, but you're telling me, Clay, that I've also got to spend another $500 to $1,500 depending on how involved my services are. And my answer is you don't have to, but if you want to be wildly successful with the software, you do need to spend more money on services. And that's just the truth. And so, we look at our customers, and the most successful customers, they've either got, and it's not just with us. You see this all across CRM, but software CEOs don't want to talk about it because it makes the sale harder. But it is the truth, and I care about our customers' success, not about making the sale. And so I'm going to tell people straight up, look, you're going to – with us, it's about a 5X ratio in enterprise. In small business, you see it more in the 1, 2, 3 times. And so typically for us, if a customer is spending a few $100 a month on the software, they're probably also spending, 1, 2, 3 times that on services.
Yeah, I guess that comes down to education and people actually knowing what it's worth and the value of doing that from past experience, but also that's probably more likely than in enterprise, because there's other experts and people who can advise, and that makes sense.
Right.
But all those things do ultimately, they've filtered down into small business. It's like the importance of, it's like the other thing that I've seen a lot more these days, or just heard people talking about, people have a better understanding of brand and branding and what that even is than they used to. I mean, maybe
right.
not. They just do. It's like, it's a little bit about what we talked about before. Things just filter down into people's imagination. Next thing you know, they're like, they wake up one day and they've got and they sort of understand things, and they don't understand how. And I think like a lot of that is just general exposure to data and information. And and people's natural tendency to do more research because they've got tools at their fingertips, online everywhere, they can do it. But
right.
I think for the most part, in the trade-off between negative impacts of exposure to the internet, etc., I feel like for the most part, the advantages, especially when it comes to people researching and educating, is greater. And I think and I'm just getting back, like, as we're getting towards the end of like these things we're talking about in the podcast, like a key thing for me, things you're talking about is that education piece. It's like helping people to understand. And from your point of view, it's getting over that potential hurdle, that sort of pain point, which once again has been something that I've always thought that's just problem for tech things. Like it is. You just got to, you have, it'd be great in a world where people just came in and they automatically understood everything and they automatically understood all the right way, which is never going to happen. And people just have to learn, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, you got to teach, you got to educate and you, and obviously you got to help people see the value. And so mm-hmm. why do customers spend 5 times on services in enterprise and two or, you know, 1, 2, 3 times on services in small business? Well, it's because if you're trying to grow a small business and you got all these leaks in your system and you spend a few, let's say you're doing $500,000 a year in revenue and you spend $300 a month on our software product. Well, why wouldn't you spend an extra $500 and grow so that you can grow your business from $500,000 a year to $750,000 the next year and $1 million the year after that? I mean, the value is there. That's why people end up doing it. They don't realize they need to do it up front, but then they realize, oh, yeah, when I put a little bit more skin in the game on this, I can plug the holes in my leaky bucket. I can grow the business. And that's what I want. I want to grow the business. So you start to go, well, yeah, would I spend a dime to get a dollar? Yeah, I'll do that. I think that makes good sense. Let's go ahead and do that. Even though I thought it was going to be a nickel, you know, I'm happy to spend a dime if I'm going to get the dollar. And that's just part of what, you know, successful small businesses learn. And unfortunately, in small business early on, you tend to not realize that that's the investment you have to make in order to grow. And so, you know, we're helping people see that. But one success story at a time, people start to realize that's the way it works, and they say, "Hey, sign me up."
Absolutely, yeah. It's a process. It's the acceptance of the process. And I'm like you were saying, like you start off, and heaps of people can't do it. They don't have the funds to do it. But then, at least even when that is the case, because we work with a lot of people who are just starting their business too, from, you know, startups, mid-size, you know, all through. And the one thing that I always like seeing too is actually seeing that change. Like that's always kind of
The best.
Yeah, I guess because that's actually probably the most if I was to reflect on it, like it's probably one of the most exciting things when, you know, we've had a client who came to us and went, oh, I don't know this or this, and we're, you know, had a little bit more experience and we've been able to go, even questions like, what do I use for accounting software? And I'm like, well, we use Xero, you could use that. You know, simple things. It's not always like big rocket science revelations, but just then seeing people and then some years down the track, they've, you know, grown their business, they've got a couple of employees.
Right.
That's really cool. Like I it's because I see our own story then in that too, and like we're all sort of really helping each other out at the end of the day, like we're trading services. But like as a I guess as we're sort of at the pointy end of the podcast, I'd like to ask you, Clay, have you got, say, a particular it doesn't have to be a quote or sort of some particular individual message or thing that you'd like to leave people with, either from the book or a famous person or
at the heart of small business is the challenge of follow-up. And I say all the time, the fortune is in the follow-up. When you follow up more, you sell more. When you follow up more, you get greater repeat sales, greater profit. Most profit in small businesses comes from post-sale. It's the reviews, the referrals, and the repeat business. I say these are the 3 R's of profit. And they say there's 1 R in profit. No, there's 3. Reviews, referrals, repeat business. Those are the 3 R's of profit. That's where most profit comes in small business. And yet, if we don't follow up after we get the sale and really continue to do that, then we don't get those fortunes. So the fortune is in the follow-up. It's true in the marketing process, the sales process, the service process, all across the customer lifecycle. If people will just remember the fortunes in the follow-up, don't worry if you get it exactly right. Just do more follow-up and you're going to grow your business. And then you start to realize, oh, well, to do more follow-up, I need to systematize this. I need to put an automation platform in place. That's obviously what we do.
That's great. It's a great, simple, but ultimately that's, 100%. That's our ultimate truth, really, isn't it? It's like, it's easier too. It's easier. Yep. And especially with, existing clients, like, and it's not just for that individual sale. It's just keeping, I think at the heart of it for me, that feels like there's an even further underlying message to that, which is communication. It's like, you know, keeping, it's like you're following up. Well, what's that about? That's actually about just keeping in touch.
Keeping the relationship going. That's right.
Yeah, it's actually just about, like, you know, hey, we're here to do this, or here's something to help you. It doesn't have to be like, it's not, you know, even always like, hey, we've got something to sell you. It's like, hey, here's something. I mean, in fact, most of the time it's not. It's just like, hey, here's something helpful for you. Have you thought of this? It could be, you know, handy. If it's not, it might just park it. It's helpful in the future, you know, who knows? But it's just that, this is great. And how do people best, find out more about, like, you and the book, and then keep, like, where do they go online? How do they find out about you?
They can go to, conquerthechaosbook.com, to get a copy of the book, or they can go, if they want to learn more about kind of plugging the holes in their leaky bucket, they can go to keep.com/playbook, where we basically help each, you know, help a business get a playbook for growth in their business, how to plug the holes in the leaky bucket. So keep.com, keap.com/playbook. If you want to plug the holes in your business and grow it. On the other hand, if you want to get the book, which obviously relates to it, you can go to conquerthechaosbook.com. There's a bunch of free resources there.
Thanks, Clay. There's one really, really great series of sort of topics to talk about. It's been really interesting. And I'm sure there's like a bunch of people I know who, like, all of this sort of stuff is like absolutely, absolutely top of mind. So they'll be very interested. Listen, and thanks once again. Any parting notes?
You know, I think just for people who, when you want to grow your business, it doesn't feel natural to say, let me go plug the holes in the bucket. No. But that's actually what it is. Because if you don't, you're just pouring more water into a leaky bucket that's inefficient and causing problems. So it's not always the most glamorous thing to plug the holes, but that's actually what grows the business.
Yeah, but the ship sails better, right?
Yes, that's right.
After that, I think
that's right.
I think you don't have to be a sailor to know that. So I think that's great. Well, thank you once again. It's been a real pleasure, very enjoyable. And thanks again, everyone, for listening to the Great Business Podcast. And say goodbye to everyone, Clay.
Thanks for having me, Saul. It's great to be with you. And to everybody out there, keep growing.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.